Hello, everyone, and welcome to our first episode of Beyond Packaging. I'm your host, Laura Foti.
And I'm the co-host, Matthew Wright.
Matthew, where are you joining us from this morning?
I'm in Chelsea, New York, downtown, where it all started for me many years ago.
You know what's funny? I was thinking about that. That really is where your packaging journey began.
Yep, I was walking the same streets this morning that I did many, many years ago. I won't say how many, but quite a few years ago, and grabbing coffee out of a diner just like it was yesterday.
Did you sell any pizza boxes this morning?
No pizza boxes, but I was in the floral district as we speak, and it takes me back to my days of selling floral boxes. So a lot of fun.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this. I remember you told me the story of when you got your first mobile phone, if you could call it that. It was in a suitcase.
Yeah, I don't think it was a mobile phone, but yeah, suitcase phone.
And I'm like, I can't believe they had suitcase phones. I never thought you were that old.
It wasn't that long ago that we didn't have mobile phones. But yeah, it was great story. Salesman, it was the number one seller in the company, told them to give me a cell phone because I was working in the most dangerous neighborhoods. So I was the first one in the company to have a suitcase or mobile phone. I thought it was quite great at that time.
And now you have an iPhone. Very, very different. We've come such a long way. And we're going to talk a lot about the state of the industry today. I think it's interesting. You're back where it all started. New York has changed a lot as well, right?
It's a totally different city. I mean, you know, it's great. People live in neighborhoods that used to be factories and used to have, Brooklyn and some of the other areas really have changed, obviously, for the better. In a lot of cases, but still it's great people here making great products, hustling every day. I love the hustle in New York, nothing like it. I'd say that's the same as it was years ago. Maybe not so many street carts selling product off of it, but the same hustle, same energy that it was many years ago. Just a little
bit. We love that. And I remember you told me meat packing, they actually did pack meat. I thought it was just like a trendy name.
No, it was actually kind of an interesting time because it was going back in time. We're going from the butchers in the stores to actually prepackaged meats. And so New York was really the epicenter of prepackaged meats. So the meat would come in from the Midwest, slaughterhouses, package it, and to packages that the stores would sell. It was a new thing and really exploded here in the meatpacking district for many years. And obviously that today is all amazing, beautiful condos.
Oh, yeah. It's unbelievable. I mean, on a few weeks ago, as you know, we went on a tour. I was so excited to see how, you know, one of these meat, quote unquote, meat factories works. And it's amazing to see how automated everything is. I mean, the entire industry is just transformed. And, you know, we want to go back in time. We just released a report here at SpecRite called The State of Spec Management. I want to give Laura Sams a shout out. She's behind stage here. This is our third edition of the report, Matthew, as you know. And it really started as a survey to figure out how are people managing packaging and product specs today. And I will tell you, a lot hasn't changed in 3 years and a lot has changed in 3 years. I want to kick it off with the first question we ask. And by the way, we surveyed hundreds of professionals across food, bev, CPG, beauty, packaging, product titles. We really got a swath of the industry, large companies, mid-sized companies. So I would say it's pretty representative. Matthew, I'll let you take a guess what the top three methods are. This is in the year 2025. What are the top three methods for managing product and packaging data?
Well, you kind of gave it up. I mean, I don't think it's changed a lot. So I'm assuming Excel is still the winning number one position. Number two position is probably some form of shared documents, PDFs. And then email. You know, email's got to be on the list somewhere because, again, those have been the methods for 20 plus years. I look at, and hopefully we'll start seeing spec management come up the ranks. You know, I'm a big F1 fan. So, you know, we're in like P19 position right now. You know, P1 is Excel. Obviously, those got to be displaced. The craziest thing, I want to hear if I'm right. The craziest thing is that static data. It's as worthless as, you know, data was on walls of the tombs years ago. You can't do much with it today. So unfortunately, it's not progressive.
You're absolutely right, Matthew. And I think what's really interesting to me is these methods have increased since we last benchmarked this. I have a hypothesis why. So in 2025, 65% of people are using Excel to manage product and packaging specs, followed by 57% in share drives and 43% in email. And that's actually every single category is above what it was 2 years ago. So 2 years ago, 43% were using Excel, 45% were using shared drives, 32%. It actually, the ranking of the systems has not actually changed. The reason I think it is, and I'm curious your thoughts, Matthew, I think there's just more awareness of this data because of things like EPR, you know, extended producer responsibility, because of, I mean, we just had the tariff, I don't even know what to call it, tariff crisis happened where everyone goes, where's my data? Yeah. Why do you think it is that there's an increase in reporting these categories?
Oh, super easy. It's what I talk about all the time. When the going gets tough, we work harder, right? And so what you're seeing is working harder. You're not seeing working smarter. You're not seeing stepping back and reinventing what should be the case. So that's why you're seeing the numbers increase in each one of those categories, is because more and more people are doing it, you know, harder. Because again, the backdrop of regulations on top of us, and people are panicking and trying to figure this out. But again, that's all just static data. It's not doing anything for them other than just getting them from point A to point B right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always interested in how much of what we hear in the news makes it into, you know, companies as a crisis. And when the tariffs came out, I thought, you know, it's not really clear what's going to happen. I'm sure companies are waiting and seeing. But one of our colleagues, their wife works in procurement.
Yep.
And we come in on Monday and we're like, how was your weekend? And he goes, my wife had like 20 spreadsheets pulled up trying to figure out the impact of tariffs on her products. And I thought, oh, okay, this is legit.
No, I was on my way to a major retailer and got pulled aside and said, I can't go because they're in a tariff emergency meeting. And it was a product that's consumed every day, all day by people. And you wouldn't think of it being caught up in the tariffs, but it's an imported product. And so, yeah, no, it's a major impact. All of this is really coming down on tops of business that already are challenged and have a lot of work to be done. Now, tariffs, EPR, all of this is on top of that.
Yeah, and 44% of companies who responded to this survey categorized their spec data as highly complex, and 75% noted the need for a better spec management tool. I mean, essentially, we're talking about billion-dollar supply chains being run like it's 1999. 61% of companies say data accuracy is their number one challenge, followed by version control. Matthew, how have you seen this manifest over the years?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously getting more complex. You know, the products are getting more complex, the supply chains are getting much more complex, and failure is just not an option. But and so again, what we're seeing, if you added up those three top categories, is 160% of something, right? So you're just seeing this inertia, this energy trying to come and fix these problems quickly before it makes it to market, before the penalties are levied. And that's what companies are trying to get ahead of it, but failing constantly and trying to get that done. And that's costing everybody time and money.
Yeah, absolutely. The other interesting takeaway from the survey is really around supplier collaboration. I know this is a topic near and dear to your heart. 38% say their current systems support supplier collaboration poorly, and 14% say not at all. Email usage as a supplier communications tool is up in 2025. Matthew, you were a longtime packaging supplier. How does this make you feel?
Well, we'll go back to the fact of whether or not email when I first got in the business, but we were having communications, and communications of the day was a lot of in-person. So you'd have to rush, you'd have an emergency, get over somewhere to solve some sort of problem, come back to your factory, get it solved. And then obviously it transitioned into email, but the activities have not changed. It's the same. It's send the email to somebody to get something solved, send it back to them, and back this back and forth. It's really ineffective or ineffective. And so, you know, I know we do a lot of webinar calls or other types of calls to try to facilitate this. But again, we're not getting at the root thing, which is everybody seeing the same data at the same time. And that's the answer.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. You know, we did a video a few years ago called Margarita Manufacturing about a fictional company. And it's all about how everyone in the company is looking for this data. And then this woman says, have you talked to Barb? And Barb is like the human API connecting everyone in the organization. And Barb, that was based off a true story we heard. And I was in a call last week and they had a Barb too. And they're like, we had this guy so-and-so and he retired after 40 years and he knew everything. You know, he knew all the data in his head. He knew where it lived. He probably had supplier relationships. And it really is, it's very revealing that a lot of this is still happening. I think this segues into another interesting trend that is, I would say, broadly talked about in the world today. I think it's up and coming for packaging, and that's artificial intelligence. AI is definitely coming. Most are not ready. 93% of respondents aren't using AI yet, but most want to for things like reporting, predictive analytics, and data entry. You know, Matthew, one of the things you've talked about is in order to use AI, you have to have a strong data foundation. So how should all the packaging and product folks listening to this think about leveraging AI?
Yeah, and I would say today they're probably not because they don't have that foundational data they need to run AI against. And so with that in mind, obviously that data set's most critical to getting the value of AI. There's so much value when we get that minimal data set established and accessible that then layer technology on top of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think this is going to be an even bigger deal than Google search was. I remember, you know, Matthew, I'll go down memory lane too. I remember I was in elementary school when Google came out. And I went home to my parents and I'm like, this is going to change everything. And I wish my dad had bought Google stock. Spoiler alert, he didn't. But I mean, think about how would you learn, you know, when you look for something, you're looking on Google. And I think what's interesting is these artificial intelligence tools, whether it's ChatGPT or others, it really will, it's already changed my day to day in terms of how I'm learning about things. I have it explain things to me in different ways. I mean, it really is unbelievable. But to your point, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, if you are one of the people managing data in spreadsheets, you can't put AI on top of a spreadsheet, really. You know, no. It's got to be run against a large data set.
And AI is what it is. It's intelligence, right? And so it's just going to help you respond to things faster if you pull in the right data streams and respond to consumers and regulatory demands just quicker and more intelligently.
Yeah. And the last topic we want to cover, by the way, contact us and we'll send you the full report. It's definitely robust. It's worth the read. It's a lot of insights. It's great to share with your teams to just know that you're not alone in this. The last one is around consumer awareness. And I know this is a passion of yours, Matthew. 74% of consumers are more likely to buy from brands that are transparent around sustainability. 69% say companies are not honestly reporting their progress. We're actually going to talk about this later on in the show of a large company that just kind of got called out. You know, this is all about greenwashing. It's all about trust. You know, what are your thoughts on the consumer aspect of this?
Hey, listen, we've been seeing the trend for years as far as just consumer awareness. I mean, sustainability is one output of that, but just consumer awareness, the public, the consumer feeling comfortable with the person that's giving them product, is telling them what's going on, what's in the product, where the product's coming from, and ultimately how sustainable it is. I think it's just this relationship between the producer and the consumer that's growing tighter and stronger every day. And it's changing, obviously, the way people are buying products. We see that with, you know, ingredients on the front of the package, not hidden in the back somewhere. It's on the front. Hey, I've only had 6 ingredients and here's what they are. And so same thing with sustainability. Here's what this is made of and here's how you should feel about it. And that's going to drive consumer decisions.
You know what's interesting too, and this is a great segue into our next segment, which is the rise of packaging legislation. So State of Spec Management, if you want the report, we'll send it to you. Message us report. This is the latest news. So things are getting urgent. According to Packaging Dive, Maryland is set to become the 6th state to adopt an extended producer responsibility program if Governor Wes Moore signs the SB 901. The bill passed in the final hours of the state's legislative session. If signed, the EPR law would cover certain packaging and paper products, including beverage containers. A PRO would be set up to set up fees and reimbursements, which would cover the cost of collection and transportation and processing costs. The PRO would be responsible for setting reimbursement rates each year. The bill calls for reimbursement rate to cover at least 50% of the cost by July 2028, then 75%, and then 90% by 2030. Matthew, what do you think of this latest proposed law?
There's probably some people going, well, there's 44 more states. Maybe it'll go away. It's not going away. The 44 states are coming. Listen, this is about landfills. This is about no more places to put the trash, no more places to get rid of the trash. This is not going away. It's just going to get more intense and more scrutiny put on the producers of product. And you got to get ahead of it because it's just coming and you won't be able to keep up with it. Oregon was a big task. There's 49 more to go. And Oregon's not that dramatic of a state in terms of consumption. So now California, Colorado, all these big states, obviously Maryland's a big state as far as consumption goes, are coming ahead of you. You got to figure it out now. It's not, you can't just keep working harder to try to catch up with it.
Yeah, you know, we had a really insightful session about this at Spec Summit. We hosted Spec Summit in Nashville, Tennessee, and we actually had a state senator come and talk about this. And one of the things they wanted to demystify was if this was a red state, blue state problem. You know, a lot of people said, oh, EPR is going to be a blue state thing because a lot of blue states were first to uncover it, but Tennessee's working on theirs. So to your point, you know, this doesn't actually feel like a political issue. It feels like more of an infrastructure issue.
Yeah, no, this is a complete infrastructure issue. You know, it's not a blue and a red state issue. I think there is going to be some challenges for sustainability that's displacing things, or maybe, you know, changing the way we procure energy, things like that. But this is different. This is about that we have nowhere more to put our trash. If there's all the landfills are full, nobody wants one in their backyard. You know, other countries are not taking our trash anymore. This is truly about the cost it takes to then for get rid of product. And that is not a political issue.
I forgot. I'm looking at my notes. We actually did survey people on how they felt around the upcoming EPR laws. And it's very revealing. 62% of the respondents said they're concerned about the financial impacts of noncompliance. 56% are concerned their vendors aren't prepared. We're going to talk about that. 54% are concerned about a negative brand impact, and 44% don't have clear access to the necessary data. Matthew, we've talked a lot about the impact on brands. How does this impact the packaging community?
That's confusing. I mean, you know, obviously we started the Sustainability Data Council. Roots is really trying to create a common language between everybody, suppliers, brands, retailers, and we're having great momentum in that group of trying to demystify and clarify the information. But it's really hard. It's confusing who's responsible for what data. What data do you have to give up? What data don't you have to give up? And then ultimately for the packaging vendors, they have to look forward and make capital investments in what's the product for the future. And that's a really, you know, that's something we've done and spent a lot of time in my life on doing with a much more predictable background. You know, now we're not really sure what's the next package that's going to be available or should be available for a consumption of these product companies. And that's based upon, I think, as I always said, sustainability is going to change, the definition is going to change, and it's going to change really based upon how we can get rid of this product the most effective way. So that's a really difficult thing to look in the future. I'm starting to see some really cool stuff with some of the bigger companies looking at smaller, you know, innovative companies, much like you see in the CPG and food bev space, trying to find the true innovators and tagging onto them to try to help them figure the future out. So there are people working on it, but it is really complex going forward.
Yeah, I do think this is going to help transform large packaging companies too, because, I mean, you talked about this. Right now, all the brands are going to their packaging suppliers and saying, we need this data. And this data is managed in spreadsheets and PDFs, just like it is at the brand level. And what we're finding is that's not scaling. And you've always talked about workforce challenges as it is in manufacturing. They can't, number one, afford to hire people just to go through spreadsheets and send this data to customers and keep it up to date and notify them with all these changes. So it feels like a forcing function that will really make the packaging community say, can we afford to not digitize?
Yeah, we're starting to see it. You know, I've predicted it, but been disappointed in the innovation of the packaging companies from a data standpoint. We're starting to see it. You know, you and I are traveling this week to a very innovative packaging company that wants to work with us to change the world. And so I think you will start to see it. It's been a little while coming, but I think you're going to start to see a lot more packaging companies leaning into data digitization.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to be fair. I mean, we love the packaging community, and it's really modernized on the machinery side.
Yep.
One of my favorite things to do is just go tour facilities, and you go, and this equipment is high tech.
Yeah. We've done so much in that regard. I mean, it's come so far so quickly. The factories of today in packaging manufacturing are amazing. Some of the most advanced factories, period. So it's all about the front end, the digitization, the data intelligence side that we got to work on now.
Absolutely. Last in the news, this is a really big one from Reuters. Clorox in Australia was fined $5.2 million. I'm assuming it's Australian dollars. I don't actually have a unit here. Over false claims of using recycled plastic. Australia's competition regulator said on Monday that Clorox the unit was fined, $8.25 million, which is $5.19 US, by the federal court over falsely claiming its Glad kitchen and garbage bags were partially made of recycled ocean plastics. The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, ACCC, said the US-based cleaning products maker admitted to breaching the Australian consumer law from June 2021 to July 2023 by falsely claiming on its Glad kitchen and garbage bags that these were made of at least half recycled oceanic waste. The court ruling comes amid a broader societal focus on the environmental impact and sustainability, with misleading green claims potentially eroding consumer trust and creating unfair market conditions. Matthew, it feels like things are getting real. Are you surprised by this ruling?
No, not really surprised. Obviously, I don't have enough background to speak clearly on it, but I would tell you that it's coming. You know, I think that the consumer outcry, they want to know what's going on. They want to be able to make sure their procurement, their purchasing is safe and in accordance with what they want to do. And, you know, unfortunately, this is being called out the last couple of years. Now I think you're in the phase of penalties and public outcry on these topics. And so, again, very complex. If you say something in one part of the world and that same product moves to another part of the world, you have to make sure you can say the same thing. So, again, that's data intelligence.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, you know, we're not here to knock. We're just here to report on the latest news.
Yeah.
You know, as a marketing person, you got to go yell at your marketing people sometimes. And when, you know, I always hear, you know, I'm around marketers and CPG, and claims are important, right? Claims aren't just allergens. Claims are, you know, made of recycled ocean plastic. And it's fine to want to have claims, but you have to then go to your packaging colleagues and say, do we have the data to back this up? Yeah. Not, are we kind of sure? Not, do we think? You have to have this information, and you have to have the specification that says, here's the spec we're using. We are positive this percentage is recycled plastic. I think, you know, we're going to see similar things with PCR, you know, broadly used in Europe now in the States. People want to make PCR claims, how much PCR is in the product. We can't estimate anymore as a community.
No,
we have to go beyond estimates.
And not just that, supplier collaboration is more important than ever, because you're bringing all these parts together to create a product that the consumer's buying upon the belief in what you're saying, and you have to make sure everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're really excited. Well, we're not excited about all these laws. They're very stressful, but we are excited about the opportunity. I think it's going to force people to really modernize, like you said, and enable a new, you know, I truly believe that further enabled supplier collaboration will result in more innovation. You know, the more sharing of information results in innovation. So I do think while it's a challenge, it is an opportunity.
Absolutely. It's going to make it all better.
Well, now we're excited to welcome our first guest to the pod. Let me throw it up. We're welcoming Matt Dingy. He's also going to be part of our segment moving forward. Matt joins us from Michigan State University's New Product Works Collection, which features over 140,000 packages from around the world, aiming to educate and inspire the next generation of packaging engineers. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
I know, were you able to listen to our podcast? What do you think?
Yeah, no, I'm excited to kind of see this next phase of it and the topics you guys have covered. And I think it gives a really good, insightful information on everything going on, obviously, which is constantly evolving, but hard to keep up with. So that's
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, Laura, I woke up this morning, I was thinking, we probably can claim this is the world's largest collection of packaging. I mean, we should look into that, Matt, but I think we can claim that you're going to talk about.
Absolutely. Matt, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? I know in addition to Product Works, you're a packaging consultant as well.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So I live in Michigan. I guess faith in God, my family, I have a wife and two daughters, a lot of interest otherwise. And then also our family motto is I have an idea. So we're constantly telling each other we have an idea, and we raise a lot of our own food on our farm. Our recent idea was making ramen powder out of grass-fed liver. So we tried to figure out how to make this recipe. So we're still perfecting it, but we're always trying new things, I guess, is the idea.
Oh, I love that. That's so great. How did you first get involved in the packaging industry? You've worked at a variety of companies, Campbell's Soup Company, Pepperidge Farms, which is the maker of Goldfish, which is a real passion of mine. How did you first get involved in packaging?
Yeah, so I had a relative named Bruce Bradford, who worked for Philip Morris kind of in the boom of their of their products. And so when in talking with him, I kind of just realized, I mean, he was focused on one company, one product, but he's like, it's packaging is massive. And you can really, it's the most divergent niche you can find because you can take it very specifically, but in many directions. And so then I was only across town from Michigan State. So started investigating going into college, what that would look like, and kind of just took that as my kind of lead in to explore it and declare that as my major.
Oh, I love that. You know, Matthew, one of the things that amazes me is how many families are involved in the packaging industry. Like, I meet the dad who's in packaging, or the mom who's in packaging, then I meet the son. Then I've even heard of the grandsons at Michigan State. And I think that really speaks volumes to your point, Matt, how passionate people are about what they do in this industry.
Hmm.
It's very special. So what is the history of New Product Works? We've touched on it a little bit. Matthew, we're going to check Matthew's claims on if it's the largest museum in the world of packaging. But how did it really come about?
Yeah, so the brief history is it started way back when, kind of, I think it was in the 60s, by a gentleman named Robert McMath in Ithaca, New York, so in New York State. And it was started as a way for him to collect products and update clients overseas, actually, of what was going on in the U.S. And then that became sort of a cross kind of continent global build of information. Then they would mail international products to him, and he just started collecting this sort of collection. And he was largely focused on trends, products, packaging, kind of the whole thing. Then a company named Arbor Strategies and Phil Roos in Ann Arbor, Michigan, ironically enough, our chief rival university town across the state here, bought the collection and merged together. And his focus was more consumer insights, focus groups, research. So they took that collection that was building, and they had some as well that they combined and created a 7,500 square foot facility in Ann Arbor, Michigan, with full kitchens, full consumer insight, focus group set up in room, full, whiteboards to do brainstorming and inspiration sessions. So really kind of a state-of-the-art facility that kind of housed this huge collection of 140,000, I think the largest too. We'll have to confirm that. And then that was really that company. And then later on, Ipsos purchased that company. And so around, I'd say 2019, they were going to relocate the collection. And around 2020, they started realizing they weren't going to be able to resurrect this and put it back. So they were talking to one of our alumni, Brian Wagner, and one of my mentors as well, which we had both used the collection together. And he mentioned to them, what better place than the School of Packaging to kind of house this? If you guys can't resurrect it, maybe that's possible. But it's a pretty big undertaking. Basically, it's adopting a huge collection with, how are you going to put this thing back together? So that was brought to Dr. Matt Dom, the director of the School of Packaging. And he really took that inspiration and thought, how can we make this come to life? And so through a series of, Brian's initial inquiry, bringing that to life, and then Matt Dom kind of bringing together a bunch of different alumni from, I think I was counting up, it's probably four or five different companies and alumni all contributing some part of it. So we had an actual facility to bring it to, how are we going to transport it and how are we going to put this back together? So that was kind of a collection of alumni and different companies. And then one snowy November, when we had a blizzard, they thought there was a couple semi-trucks coming, and it actually ended up being five. And so they just overwhelmed this facility. And so everything was double stacked. You could hardly move or breathe in this facility. And that was, it was dropped off. And that was kind of the birth of MSU adopting this collection about a year and a half ago.
What an amazing story. And Matthew, you've gotten involved in this too, right?
Yeah, no, being on the board at MSU, I've got awareness from Matt, and really got excited about it for the reasons that Matt mentioned. Historically, it's really fun we'll talk a little bit about the segment going forward. But there's a digital aspect to this, right? And so obviously there's a physical aspect, which is great. But for those that we're trying to digitize this whole collection, is also an act of kindness towards looking back in the future to predict, or in the past to predict the future. So we've been working on building the database to represent this physical space at the museum. So it's an exciting project.
It is. I mean, you'll be able to physically go walk through this, but also digitally go look through all the packaging specifications. Yep. So it's an exciting time. Matt, what do you think we can learn from historical packaging? What's the value in it for people today?
Yeah, I think in sorting through, so we had a lot of students, so we would kind of set aside things that we thought were interesting. And I think the one thing, you know, having students that are now learning packaging in school, them picking out and, for example, refillable packs, they're pulling things from the 70s that are refillable. And we see that now. So they were kind of surprised. They're like, hey, I see this happening now. And then they're like looking at a bunch of 70s, you know, and 80s refillable packaging. So I think that because of our industry, there's new innovation, but there's a lot of concepts that were ahead of their time, or they just didn't land for whatever reason. And so I think just having inspiration in a collection like that is also one of the main benefits of going back, and also cross industry inspiration, obviously. So if you're in one industry and you go check out something that seems unrelated, but you may spark something, and that's happened a lot with this collection. And then the second part, I think, is exactly right. A segue of now we have the ability to apply technology and ask open-ended questions of this historical data set and come up with like not only those qualitative insights, but really that data and that quantitative angle at things that, I mean, you're looking at a expansive amount of data that when you apply it in that way, it's a 1-2 combination, I think, that can help you develop something new or go in a direction that you're thinking of and you're not sure of.
Absolutely. Matthew, you were going to jump in here.
No, I think it's fun too. I mean, you think about the collection, you know, back in the day, I guess we're somewhat innovative in the 70s, 80s, but you really didn't get to see things around the globe or even in different regions. There's a lot of products in that collection that I've never seen before. We don't have the space we have today, which is we get consumption of everything from the globe in front of us. So I think there's a lot of learnings in there. There's probably a lot of regions throughout the world at that time that was doing innovative things that we could repurpose and reuse. So I find it super exciting to have both the physical and the digital data aspect to this.
Absolutely. Matt, how can people listening leverage this amazing collection you have? How can people kind of get involved in this?
Yeah, so a couple ways. I would say the number one way is if you just have an idea of something that you want to use it for, that you're curious if it could do, reach out. And, you know, we have it on the school packaging website, and there's some more information there about how you can use the collection. But I would say start by just asking questions. And even the other day, someone was like, do you think this question is possible? And that's the beauty of like working with you guys too. It's like, think of a question and we'll think of how we can come up with that data using a number of tools. And so they had asked the question of like, you know, could you isolate all these packages in this category in this type of material? And so I was like, those are the questions that would be really great for the university, because we can almost pull any number of things, but what is it that you guys are looking for? What questions are you looking to have answered? And we'll see how we can address that. So that would be one thing, is just bring your questions, bring your topics of like something very odd that might seem like, I'm not sure if this collection can do that. You know, bring it forward and let us see if we can make that happen. And then you can, of course, rent the facility and bring your company or bring a group of people to kind of do an inspiration, open-ended sort of session. And then eventually the database, you know, will be accessible as well too. So I'd say those are the main ways you can get involved and leverage it.
There's going to be a lot of packaging nerd families that are going to do a left-hand turn off the freeway, and the kids are going to wonder where they're going. They're going to a packaging museum. But it's super fun, exciting. I think there's tremendous opportunity there. And as Matt said, it's absolutely accurate. Tell us what you want to learn, and then we can figure out how to give those to other people.
Awesome. We're so excited. I mean, Also, what an epic scavenger hunt you could have there. Talk about team building. If you're working at a large CPG company and you need a team building exercise, go do a scavenger hunt at the packaging museum and look for something that's a refillable. I mean, I really do think it's an amazing collection and will spark so many ideas for people. We're so proud to work with you on it. And we're excited to bring this to life through the podcast. So going forward, we'll be doing Off the Shelf with Matt Dingy. And Matt will be bringing us a product. We won't know what it is ahead of time. And he'll describe what the product is, what time period it was from, a little bit about it. And then Matthew and I are going to react live in real time.
I'm excited about it.
And we don't know what he's going to bring next. So we won't start that today, but stay tuned. We will be recording another emergency pod this week to just talk about tariffs, and we'll do one at the end of that. So this was a wrap on our first show. Matt and Matthew, thank you so much for joining me and going beyond packaging. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.